Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth gear for all types of weather, all types of terrain, all types of budgets. It's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. This podcast is a super fun one. Guy local to us just happens to be the only guy to ever win the Total Archery Challenge truck twice. And I started asking him like how he sets up his bow and what was going on. And he said, we got to do a podcast. So lo and behold, that's how this podcast came out. And he kind of breaks down everything that he does to get sighted in and some really cool stuff there as far as that. But him and his buddy Andrew, they've kind of coined this term of tailgate ready, which transfers over really well to the hunting world where it's that cold shot. You have to be ready. You don't get to go warm up on the practice range and all that stuff. So as we go through this podcast, he's going to talk about that and the things that he does to be tailgate ready for that cold shot at 111 ish yards, and you'll hear that here on the podcast as well. But after doing this and talking about it, for any of you guys that are attending the Michigan TAC, watch our Instagram coming up probably next week. We're gonna have a contest, a giveaway. So Travis wants to do for somebody who's going to Michigan TAC, we're gonna be shooting for the truck. He's obviously going to be there, going to be shooting for the truck. And he said, why don't we try and get somebody set up, get them sighted in. And if you're local to us or you can come down, we'll actually shoot with you. Travis wants to, he's going to be working with me to do this as well. But we'll get you a custom set of arrows built by Kanadi. They're going to build a set of arrows for me, Travis, John, and one lucky winner. And then we're going to go ahead and go one further because it wouldn't be any fun to get you set up, give you the arrows, and make you pay for your own shot. So we're going to go ahead and sign you up for 11 shots at the truck. So just for, you know, following along with Travis, following along with us. So keep an eye out for that probably next week as we get that all shored up. But that's going to be a really fun thing. And then we've got another project coming up that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, as far as what bows we're going to be shooting for tack and kind of a little comparison we're doing. So going to be super fun. But yeah, so we're going to be up at TAC. We've got rented a house again. There's going to be a bunch of guys up there. Still going to be doing our barbecue as we move into this TAC thing. So real busy spring for us here with the spring bear hunt and then TAC being the following weekend. Turkey season's coming up, lots of stuff. But hopefully this will get you guys out and getting you ready to shoot your bows. Now, in those talks with Kanadi and Zinger, Brian said, what do you think about us doing like a giveaway for guys that are in for the truck? And I said, man, I've been telling you this for years. You should try this. So if you shoot for the truck and you get in, and this doesn't just Michigan Tech, this is anybody that shoots for the truck and gets in the drawing for the truck with a Zinger or a Kanadi arrow, you're going to be, you automatically win. You just got to post something on social with you and Corey or who's ever running it. With your photo, tag Zinger, tag Kanadi, and you get a free 6-pack of Zingers. And then you're in a drawing for a free set of Kanadi arrows. But if you win the truck and you're just shooting Zingers, they're going to give you $500. And if you're shooting Kanadi arrows, they're going to give you $1,000. So a little bit of incentive if you were, you know, on the fence about it, or you're saying, man, you know, I'm going to get in for the truck this year 100%. I know it. And I've been kind of on the fence about these Zingers. This is your opportunity to get out there and, you know, kind of really test them out. And, you know, it's a fun little giveaway that they're doing to kind of add on, make the whole thing a little sweeter. So pretty awesome there. And that's why we love working with the guys over at Zinger and Kanadi, Brian and Steve and Brandon. Great dudes. So anyways, that's kind of what's going on for TAC at this point for us. And, you know, got to give a shout out. The Latitude guys, they're going to be up there. Latitude, use code BHC to save 15% up there. And check out their Method podcast with David Riley. Great stuff going on there. You know, Big Shot Targets, you can use code BCP, 10% off there. Spartan Forge, man, look at their social. Look what's going on with their AI finally getting to be implemented a little bit. And their online desktop scouting is phenomenal. The app's still great, but the desktop is really, really pulling forward. Working with Lucky Buck again this year, obviously Canadian Zinger and Genesis 3D. Really cool stuff. As we get closer to the saddle hunting stuff, I've got a couple of their products that I really want to showcase that helped me out last year. But congratulations on them. They've bought a building and they're in working on getting a place set up to actually work for them. So congrats to Austin and Hope over there. And, you know, just all of our sponsors, partners, all that stuff, they give back through Patreon and our Patreon community and all of that. So shout out to the Patreons that help us to be able to do this kind of stuff. And this podcast is really fun. You guys are going to learn something. If you want to shoot for the truck, definitely listen to this one and find those hidden gems that are in there. Great stuff, and look forward to to letting you know more about kind of what we got going on, and be looking out for that giveaway post. So anyways, as always, thanks everybody for listening. Enjoy the episode. Today we're going to talk some bow setups, arrow setups. We're going to get the skinny on building arrows for tack from the one and only Travis Johnson.
Hey guys.
And he's brought along his buddy Andrew Schmieding.
Hello.
And I'm thinking Andrew might be the wild card here. He's
yeah,
it's where the real you know, money's going to be made here. But I mean, how often do we get to see a guy that's won the truck twice, right?
Well, you only get to see it once because it's only happened once so far.
I was thinking about it on the way over here, and I think about like the movie, like everybody that listens is probably kids, so they don't know, but the movie Rounders, like Matt Damon, he says, you know, there's a reason that you see the same four guys at the World Series of Poker every year. Like, it isn't random.
That is true.
Right?
They're definitely the luckiest.
Yeah. And so that's what I was kind of thinking about, you know, Travis here, and we're just lucky enough that he happens to, you know, live just up the highway. Yeah, so
45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoots at the club. I mean, hell, he just posted another 60X last night in our sweatshirt 2 days ago or something. So
yeah. So last night I went up to Cadillac to FPS Archery, and they were doing their association shoot, which is called Straight Field, their association. So like right now in Muskegon here, we're called the LMAA, Lake Michigan Archery Association. And so their association is Straight Field. And so it's like a regional shoot within the state of Michigan. And they're having probably like record numbers this year for turnout wise for shooters for their Straight Fields events. And like LMAA, we're having record lows. You know, we're pulling like 20 to 50 shooters. I guess they're pulling the same up there, 20 to 50, but they were down to like 8 to 15 shooters a shoot. Not when we were doing 120, gosh, were we seeing 160? But for sure 120, 100 to 120, we were doing a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago for LMAA.
So for like people around here, people like in the West Michigan area, like what does that mean? Like for, because I mean, you text me every once in a while and John and I have come up and shoot, you know, a couple of five spots.
Yeah.
But like, what is that? How do they get involved in that? Like how would you even know that that exists?
And see, that's what I feel like with the target archery, 20 yard target archery, it's pretty hidden. Almost. And now with social media, it's becoming out there a little bit more and more people are engaging with it, but still it's like an older person sport, to where it's not being talked about or, you know, advertised, like say in a newspaper, like on a radio or stuff like that. It's just, there's a shoot this weekend, you know, and no one's really like, hey, you got to come shoot this or whatever, but the clubs up there in that Straitsville area, their clubs, so like FPS, they have a range, you know, smaller than the Bowman's, but so they push it there as their shop. They're bringing their shooters in and then other people in the area. And then like Marion, they have a club, a shop called Untamed. And so they have a range and their shooters are showing up. And then they're pulling other people in through that. So, I mean, it's spreading there. And so, like, here for LMAA, like, Oceana, the club I shoot out of, we don't have a shop. You know, it's just Andrew and Carl Wink and I, and that's about it. They're the ones that are doing the association shoots. So, we mentioned to the league night people, you know, hey, come shoot an association shoot or whatever. And one or two are going to show up out of the... You know, what is there, 30 or 40 of us?
Yeah, 30 or 40 of us.
Yeah, yeah. And so it definitely helps to have the local shops involved with archery clubs, say. Because like Muskegon Bowman is considered a club, you know, and there's not a shop associated with Muskegon Bowman and neither Oceana. So going back to the LMAA, Grand Valley Archery, or sporting goods, whatever you want to call it, whatever they go by, they are part of the LMA now, and they had a shoot, and they'll have another shoot coming up, and they had over 50 there, which is a good number. I mean, that's how it should be for LMAs, 50 to 120, 110 shooters, but it's just not there this year or last year, so hopefully it keeps going up.
So I almost feel like, John, you could probably speak to this too, is that it like either we're so like close to it with our club, like for as much time as we spend here, mm-hmm. that it seems like that verbiage of like a shoot, oh, there's a shoot, oh, there's a shoot, oh, there's a shoot. It gets kind of lost in the mix, at least for us here, because
no, I understand.
There's a chili shoot, there's a 3D right. shoot, there's a spaghetti shoot, there's a, you know, there's a longbow shoot. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Club so they all shoot. Kind of blend together, so it's just like you know, it's and I think that maybe that's why we just don't get vested in it, is because it seems like we don't have to look very hard to like find a shoot if we wanted to shoot.
Oh, because you guys are fortunate to have Muskegon, because Muskegon's such a big big club with so many members, and they just always have something going on, which is great. Real great.
And they're always, I feel like they're always pushing like the Coopersville shoots and like some of the other ones.
And that's 3D though, right? Coopersville.
Coopersville's 3D. And I feel like that, but again, there isn't like this big distinction, right? It's just like, oh, there's a shoot, there's a shoot. And it's like, if you're, maybe because we're not like.
You got to probably say in the loop or out of the loop. Yeah, but if you're in the 3D loop, then you know 3D. If you're in the indoor 20-yard paper stuff, you're in the loop and you know what's going on. But you're trying to, like, what about the bow hunters, right? Like, what? How do they know about this?
Yeah,
how are they
going to find out about this? And I think that's kind of, like, the thing is, like, I would say that everybody that we know is, like, a hunter. So even, like, our paper league is the bow hunter league.
So our, like, during the week, we have, you know, our league nights. Two of them are small game. And that's what we shoot one of those.
Which is the greatest because similar to 3D, but the cost and targets is way better.
Way better. But I think there's only one night where they're shooting the three spot or the five spot.
And I believe that's Thursday
night.
Yep, for Muskegon.
And so, I mean, yeah, I think it kind of gets lost. Like everyone, well, we got league night or shoot. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I really like shooting the five spot, but it's, you know, as our team, we always shoot the small game league. So it's like,
well,
I would like to shoot two nights, but you know, it's like, yeah,
there's life times, too.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, kind of, so when Travis got here, I was shooting my bow, trying to figure out this release and go through all my target panic. And these two, like, look at my release now, which used to be like so hot. And they're like, oh my God, the thing won't go off.
But it's working for you. So you need to keep using it.
Yeah. But Travis is like, well, how's it been shooting? And I'm like, well, I shoot the small game league, so I can't even barely see the X or like where I'm shooting at. So I'm just kind of like shooting at an area.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't necessarily know like how the bow is shooting. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I know the bow's, you know, hitting where it's supposed to.
Yeah.
But like, am I putting it where it's supposed to? Like, there's so many things that go into play. So like coming in here and like shooting at a spot is like somewhat like is almost like able to reset. Mm-hmm. Right.
So like, say for someone like you and a lot of bow hunters, I feel like they need to take the time and not necessarily shoot it like a, say, a paper target, but just take and put like a bail pin or a piece of tape, or just take an arrow and shoot your first arrow at the target and say, I'm going to shoot, try to hit my arrow. If they can't hit the arrow, they need to move their sight or try to figure something else out. You know, because it's easy to get panic or easy to get freaked out by paper. Wouldn't you agree, Andrew?
Oh, I would agree.
Because Andrew's been down this whole deal to where he couldn't even put his pin on a full paper target. And now he's to the point where he's shooting five spot or three spot and he's hitting the spots. Like we went to Lancaster with Carl and I this year. And he shot Lancaster. He wanted to experience what a big shoot was like. And I think everyone that shoots a bow should step out of just shooting a bow in their backyard or in their basement or whatever and go shoot a big shoot. Just go commit to it. Sign up Lancaster. Next weekend is Indoor Nationals NFAA. And that's in Louisville, Kentucky. And so that's a good time because it's over, usually over St. Patrick's Day weekend, which Louisville, Kentucky on 4th Street always gets pretty wild.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I can tell you where you can stand like weekend at Bernie's if you want to know where John's favorite alley to hang out in is.
Yeah. And then there's also Vegas. And so there, you know, you can roll through YouTube and, you know, say some of these YouTube bow hunters on there. They'll show up to Vegas because you're shooting 30 arrows for 3 days in a row and you don't get wore out from that. You get wore out from being in Vegas, you know, say you're hiking miles around checking stuff out in Vegas. If you're doing that or you're doing whatever else people do in Vegas.
So what's funny is the podcast immediately prior to this one, I talked with Nate Sellers and you guys ended up shooting next to each other at Lancaster. So I talked to him about that because he qualified really well.
Yeah, he was number one qualification for Lancaster. I was number four. Yep, but we never matched up. The kid that beat both of us made sure that we were going to talk to each other on stage.
Well, and John, what did you say when you said, I was telling you that Travis got fourth? You were like, oh my God, he was up there with the idiots with the mic, right?
Yeah. Like, man, I wouldn't be able to deal with that shit. Like, sitting there talking to you when you're on a pedestal like that.
But that's what you got to do. You have to step out of your element and you have to experience stuff like that. You have to do, you know, you have to do stuff like that if you want to become a better archer, even in the woods, even hunting, or say at tack and standing there with your buddies and say if there's a couple new people watching you or you're on that first bale and there's the line of people waiting to, I mean, it's not like that anymore. Tack isn't like that anymore to where there's more knock times and they space everyone out better to where you don't have those big log jams like they used to be. You know, so a lot of people can't even shoot that arrow when they got an extra audience standing there. So it's good to step out and do those things and put yourself out there.
That was the first time that I broke for me was at Tack. Like when I like got target panic the first time, it was just like I couldn't even hold the pin on there. Mm-hmm. And I'd draw back and I'd be underneath it and I'd go up and then I'd be like, oh my, and I just like release as I was going up. It was like 100% like drive by, like probably a 5 foot drive by. Like I was like,
wah! So we need to make sure we bring, I don't skip that when we come back to the tips and tricks for shooting for the truck and the caribou.
So the one thing about tack is I always like to get up there first and shoot. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I like to be up there and get my arrow out of the way.
set the bar, right? To where it's like, you know, shoot at it, guys, right?
Right.
Kind of thing.
Sometimes.
Say, John had the same, I don't know if it may have been target panic or whatever, but there was a year where John was like ready to throw his bow. Oh, yeah. Like it was over. Like Mr. Calm and Collective was like, and I think it was like the second year we shot and he had these like 700 grain arrows or something. So every time, and with little tiny fletching. So every time he would shoot and miss and it would go in the dirt, it was gone.
Yep.
Oh, like, yeah, they're buried.
There's no way to
find it. So there goes $20, $30.
Even my normal arrows are, you know, they're over 500 grains and they just bury. But yeah. No, that was a year.
That's something we need to talk about when we jump in that tack thing is, you know, Dudley's already talked about it. You know, you need to make sure you have your tack arrows and you need to have your hunting arrows. But if you want to practice hunting, you better take your hunting arrows.
And that's what we do.
And so I think more people that go to tack need to think about that and go there with a mindset of, okay, what am I going there for? Am I going there to practice hunting, or am I going there to try to drop bombs with my bros?
Right.
You know, to be able to hit the 120 yarders and have a chance at it, not being like, well, that sounds different, doesn't it?
So the fortunate thing for me is like my hunting arrows, I shot 127.
Yeah.
And I still had room on my tape.
With that heavy 600 grain arrow? Okay.
With the five, it's like 510.
Yeah. But 510, I feel like is, you're in this sweet bubble. Like, once you get over 550, and then it's...
Right, then you start dropping them.
But he's got 80-pound limbs. Yep. He's got a 32-inch draw length. I mean, he's not 26.
He's a Dudley.
Guy. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it works out for me, but...
Yeah, and that's what people need to... You know, this all has been talked about on different podcasts and different videos and whatever, but it's something that people need to wrap their head around and think about when they're headed out to a tack shoot is, what am I going there for? And what I want to take away from this. And I feel like that needs to be thought about anytime they're going to shoot their bow is, what am I doing this for? And what am I going to take away from it? Not just, oh, I'm just going to go shoot arrows. No, you got to do it with a little bit of purpose, right? Of something.
Yeah. And the guys hate pulling the arrows.
Your arrows.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not going in a little ways.
No, like Greg. So Greg Letzinger, he shows up and he's shooting like some super light arrows, but he's only shooting 60 pounds. He's got a shorter draw length and, you know, he's still trying to reach out. But
now for you, like from going from like a paper guy to tack, and there, you know, there is a level of like hunting in it for you. But I mean, I feel like, and especially now after, you know, all of this, like you're expected to be able to like lay them in there at 100 or whatever. Like,
I mean,
you want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow.
Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
So there's probably a few people that watched the video with Andrew and I went down and shot with Brandon McDonald in Tennessee Tech last year. And I went down there pretty rough. Just basically I had 113 yards sighted into my bow and the rest was like close enough. It was bad. I didn't put any time into that because it was kind of early for me and I was still focusing on shooting shooting 20 yards and, you know, it's turkey season and I wasn't really 100% ready. You know, I didn't have a fresh dozen arrows built and a sight tape set to 120 yards and knowing that I'm going to be an inch high or an inch low. No, it was like, am I going to hit this thing or not? That's where I was for that shoot. Yeah.
So what's different for you as far as mindset going into attack versus Vegas?
With tack, it's, meeting people and camaraderie and hanging out and, trying to win the truck. Yeah. that's what it comes
and,
down to.
And then
to.
Vegas is
I'm going to try to win. Yep. Yep. I'm going to put a lot of time into it to where I'm practicing, two or three times a week, hitting as many local little tournaments as I can. You know, like we just spoke about the little association shoots, shooting in a shop, just taking time out and just going to a shop and shooting with no one in there and just trying to shoot a clean target to where I can hang it up and walk out of there. Just pay my money just to shoot and just walk out of it. I mean, I feel like that needs to be done more if you want to become a better paper shooter, is to walk into that shop, pay your money for the lane fee, pay your target, and shoot two ends of practice, shoot your round, whatever you're shooting. Say you're shooting 30 arrows for Vegas or you're shooting 60 arrows for NFAA 5-5 spot, like just like you're practicing on here. Try to shoot that clean score, write your name on it, date, hang it up, and walk out of there. I mean, you got to practice like that.
So in that scenario, like what happens on the third end when you shoot a 9?
You freaking keep shooting because that's what you're doing. You're trying to shoot a score like you would at a tournament. And you don't, if you cheat yourself, it's just going to ruin you when you go to a tournament.
But I mean, your goal is like to, you know, you're there by yourself. You're there to, you know, want to shoot a clean paper, go. And then like, how do you come away from that? Like mentally? Like how do you rebound, I guess?
You do it again next week.
And do better?
Do better, yeah. You don't want to go there and suck. You got to do better. Yeah, totally.
I mean, because that's, like, for me, that's the hardest part is, like, separate, you know, like I think Joel Turner talked about it, but the best way that I, like, think about it mentally is, like, that whole, like, baseball player thing where they step out of the bat, you know, and they deal with their gloves and do everything because they want to like mentally reset that it's a whole nother pitch, like it's another everything, exactly. Like everything's brand new. And like, do you have any tricks or anything like mentally or like through your shot process that allows you to
do that? Yeah. As soon as you step out of that line, like, you know, say this line's right here, the 20-yard line, any shop, any club, anywhere, you have the 20-yard line. When your feet step down there and your arrow's loaded, you have one job to do. It's just shoot your process and shoot that arrow as good as you can. And so, like with tack, same thing. You step up to that, what they have, a stake or a ribbon, a cone. Yeah, you step up to that cone, and you kick your feet in, or a lot of times you have to figure out where the target is first, because I mean, there's way too many. Like Tennessee, I feel like Andrew and I, we were looking 360 from that cone trying to figure out where the target was. But once you figure out where the target is, you kick your boots in, and you figure out and think about, you got to make that shot good and make that shot count. And that's the one thing that you need to think about and not worry about what's going on behind you. Well, I mean, at tack, it might be a little different. You need to be cautious of your surroundings in some situations. But like, say you're on the line for the truck, you know, that's a pretty safe scenario. There's been once in a while, you know, I'm going to say a stray mountain biker comes through in the back, you know, that might be hey, you need to let down or something like that. Or that crystal, I'm trying to think.
There was deer up there last year.
Andrew and I saw a meth head walking behind in Tennessee.
That was crazy.
Because everything in Tennessee was flat. You know, you don't picture it at a tack shoot. You're shooting a caribou on a flat ground. It was just this flat horse pasture where they had it all set up at. And here comes this meth head. Did he have a shirt on?
No, he didn't have a shirt on.
No
sweatpants.
Yep.
Very typical.
Straight out of the woods, right to the caribou target, and then just kind of V-lined it right for vendor alley, vendor row, and then hit the main two-track in the vendor alley and just walked right into the campground. And we're just like, wow, that was pretty intense.
Yeah, and so, there's 100-plus people all practicing right there too, so there's just all these arrows flying down there, and it's like, whoa.
So, I mean, you have to be cautious of your surroundings when you're at attack of what's behind the target and stuff like that. But when you step up to that cone, you have one job to do, and it's to make that arrow count and do the best you can.
And it's one of those things, like Travis has told me this winter practicing, you know, shoot a 30-arrow round, one arrow at a time. Like, yep. You shoot one arrow, you walk your 20 yards down, get your arrow, come back. So that way you make the most of every shot. Instead of burning the first one and then I'll make it up on the second one or the third one or the fifth one, or, you know, you practice one to where you know you have to go down and get that one arrow and come back to where you're really focusing on making that one clean shot.
I've talked to a lot of people like, and I know that this is like doing everything like completely wrong as far as like trying to like be proficient as a traditional archer and then, you know, unfuck myself with like a compound, right? Uh-huh. But with a lot of the compound guy or the traditional guys, they'll do the same thing. They're like, I only shoot one arrow. Like, you shoot one arrow, walk down there so that every time I'm not wasting, you know, not just mailing one in and saying, oh, it's okay, I'll get the next one. They're trying to make one good shot with good body mechanics and everything like that. And so,
yeah, I totally see that. It's some great training, great practice. Andrew's been working on it. He's been doing well with it. Yeah.
It's funny that you just said that word too, because in the last podcast talking with Jared Scheffler, and I was talking to Travis a little bit about this, but you know, he's doing all this wild, like really old school, like really fast, like nuts, traditional archery, like the
shooting the air on the wrong side of the riser,
the wrong side of the riser, doing like horseman style archery. But anyways, he says that when he's doing it like it's martial arts. So he said, I don't ever think about going to shoot my bow or to practice. He says, I'm going to train. Mm-hmm. And so you just said that's good training. You didn't say it's good practice. You didn't say, you know, that's a good way to do it. So is that when you're shooting at these shops, when you're doing this stuff, is that the way that you're in your head?
Yeah.
You have it down too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And even league night, or just Andrew and I meet up with, he has a teenage boy and I have a teenage boy. So we're doing Oceana. We're doing Tuesday night, like father son league almost. That's what it's turned into. It started out teenage league, but then it turned into father son league. And so basically it's the same thing there too. I mean, it's training. Yeah. And we don't do any music either. Like to where right now we're sitting in Muskegon Bowman's. one arrow went off over there, right? Just a little bit ago. Mm-hmm. But there's no music in here. The furnace kicks on once in a while. So it's like, if you can shoot an environment like that when there's not, flies. So I feel like flies is probably the hardest shooting. When you get a fly bouncing off a light and you're just at full draw and you're trying to aim. I mean, for me anyways, that's like as intense as it gets.
I would say at TAC when your buddies are razzing you and all that.
Yeah,
that's a. I mean, we've got a story that I mean is
so Andrew and I are very fortunate at the razzing part because we get to shoot Thursday night the men's league. It's not necessary; it has to be men's league, but that's what it's turned into is men's league basically, and it's a straight up shit show the whole however long it lasts. Or if we shoot 45 arrows, there's no practice. It's like you hang your targets and it's time to shoot 45 arrows and we're leaving as soon as that lasts. They're packing up while the other line is second line shooting and they're ready to pull their arrows and turn their scorecard and leave. I mean, it's hardcore. There's razzle, there's music, there's the floor shaking. And it's just like what you're going to tell this story of TAC.
Oh, I can't tell this story. You'll have to ask me later. But it was the first time, Greg Witzinger flies in from Jersey and my father-in-law's all over him. And he's shooting a hinge, has to let down with a hinge.
And your father-in-law is?
Frank.
Yep. That's Uncle what I Frank. Wanted to hear you say. Uncle Frank. We can't just say your father.
Uncle Frank.
Yeah. He's razzing him.
Yeah. So.
Andrew, this is Uncle Frank right here.
Yeah. He's got his own sticker and everything.
His own sticker. Knocks are bright. Next year it's going to be Knocks are lit.
So the kind of the way this podcast came out, and I'd asked Travis about it like in passing, like years ago, I think, like if he was building special arrows for TAC, if he was, how he was being so consistent, because you got to be inside out. Like it's got to be just so.
If people don't realize that inside out is tough. Hitting the line is easy. Andrew's been on this quest too. So Andrew and I came up with a term or a phrase for shooting the caribou is tailgate ready. You have to be tailgate ready when you are headed to go shoot that caribou. When you grab your bow out of your bow case, out of the back of the truck, car, wherever, you're walking up there, you got to be tailgate ready. You just skip the practice range, go right to the caribou. And you got to be tailgate ready. So that's what Andrew's been training on, getting tailgate ready. I've been working with him trying to get tailgate ready. And so last year at Tennessee TAC, Andrew thought he was tailgate ready, but he was not tailgate ready. He felt it.
So
got down there.
So talk to me about that from everything that we just discussed, right? So you're talking about training. We're talking about, one arrow at a time.
Correct.
At 111 whatever yards.
Yeah, so Andrew and I, we're talking about shooting 30 arrows, one arrow at a time at 20 yards, but also him and I, we do the same thing, 113 yards, 111 yards, one arrow at a time. And that way, you become tailgate ready, mentally tailgate ready.
I think another thing to help you get mentally ready, because it's all fun and games shooting 111 yards, but when you hand over the $150 to Corey or whoever's running it.
It doesn't have to be $150, people. It could be 15.
It could be 15, but
Andrew and I came up with this.
You get a better deal.
Yeah.
The more you buy, the better deal you get. Mm-hmm. So.
And you can't just go there thinking, I'm going to spend $30 and hit it. But I mean, I can't say that because it happened to me. Two arrows and.
It only does take one, but if you have multiple chances and if you get a couple free shots out of it by paying a little bit more up in the front, it works out better. But for practice, what you really should do, and I've thought about it, instead of just shooting your arrows, going down and getting them, I'll get it next time. Give your wife or your husband that $150 and then shoot your arrows. And the only way you get it back is if you hit it. So then it kind of adds.
Brought this up to me.
I just came up
with this. Next level training right here, everyone. Get ready.
So that way when, you got that pressure on you, because shooting is easy enough, but it's when you start paying. You start coughing over money, that pressure starts. And it's no different than standing on a line with 100 other guys indoors only shooting 20 yards.
At Lancaster.
That pressure.
Felt it at Lancaster.
I mean, the first round at Lancaster, I felt like I never shot my bow a day in my life. Like, it was just all foreign. And then, until you can get kind of settled in and learn to control that pressure that you're feeling.
But we got to jump back to Lancaster a little bit. Andrew got lucky because he got to shoot next to our roommate for Lancaster, which he's from the other side of the state. And so there was Andrew and I in a vehicle, and then the roommate that I just spoke of, and another guy from the other side of the state. So there's two vehicles. Andrew and I are in the front with our, we'll just call him our driver. The driver punches in GPS on his phone and takes off, and we're just kind of kicked back, and the roommate is in the car behind us. And all of a sudden it's just like, hey, driver, where are we going? We're headed back to Michigan on this tollway, and there's no getting off of it for until, like, what was it?
Yeah, 40 minutes or something.
And so the roommate is flipping out. And so Andrew gets to shoot with this dude. He gets to be next to him for his qualification score in Lancaster. And so Andrew had that to deal with on top of being on this line with 250 archers.
Well, yeah, and it probably didn't help. Levi Morgan was like 15 guys down, and you're just like, oh, wow, there's Levi Morgan. And then, like, next thing you know, Jesse Broadwater steps up next to you, and he's just kind of bullshitting with you, and you're like, whoa, like, there's all these, like, famous people that are around here shooting at the same target I am. Like, it's just, it's a whole nother aspect to bring in.
But going back to the roommate is flipping out on the practice or on the line with Andrew right there. Like, he is like,
yeah, he was pretty intense.
He couldn't handle that. We were not late. We weren't late to the shoot, but like, no. We could have been because we were stuck on this toll road.
But he was the kind of person that likes to show up an hour and a half early, shoot plenty of rounds, get acclimated to the atmosphere, the environment, and mentally prepare himself. He's not a run and gun.
And this goes back to tailgate ready. This is what the story is snowballing into. It's tailgate ready.
You got to be ready. Just drop of a hat, just pick your bow up, first shot, boom, ready.
So how did the roommate shoot? Did it throw them all off?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't make it past the qualifier, I don't think.
It was
he's got an excuse, right?
Shit show. Yeah. Yeah. But Andrew felt that. And so stepping out of the box, going to your local club, shooting a paper shoot, shooting a paper animal shoot, shooting a 3D shoot is what tack shooters or bow hunters need to do. They need to step out of the box and go to a local shoot, and then it needs to snowball into an association shoot, and then it needs to snowball into a major event, and just to try it, just to feel what it's like and to do it.
I could definitely see like going to like we know everyone in our club, like especially on our night. So like even to start here, like just go shoot a different night with the other guys that like we normally don't see.
Yeah.
You know, that would, you know, you're definitely out of your comfort zone, and then going to a different club or shop to shoot with different guys. I mean, that would make a huge difference.
And it also helps really big in for hunting scenarios, because you're raising that adrenaline level. You're getting kind of pumped up, you know, you're antsy, and like trying to perform under pressure, no different than, you know, a world-class deer steps out in front of you, and it's all kind of correlating to itself to actually make you a better bow hunter. And I want to say that they say like 80% of bow hunters suffer from some sort of target panic, and they don't even realize it.
I think it's probably 90%.
It's probably.
And it's got
to
be.
Most of them, you try to talk them into going and shooting indoor and paper. I don't like shooting paper. It's boring. And it's like, no, it's probably because you can't hit where you want to because of that target panic and not being able to actually shoot just anything, essentially. And where with like 3D, you know, you're shooting at an animal, you just kind of know where you need to hit it at, and you're either shooting for score or you're shooting to kill it. And most guys, they're just shooting to kill it, because
which is way more fun.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of shooting for score on 3D creates bad habits for hunting scenarios. And
yeah, unless you I don't know, nothing better than just shooting a big mechanical. I mean, I was a firm believer in fixed blades, and I still love them, but there's nothing better mechanical. I'm going to just step back.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
once in a while, it's fun to go like just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
So now my son is bow hunting, and I was like, he needs to shoot a fixed blade. And then I realized, like, no, he needs to shoot a mechanical that has a cut on contact and also a mechanical. He just needs to chuck it somewhere on this deer. I mean, that sounds awful. He needs to hit in between the legs and just hit the deer to where there's a hole in it. And we just need to go find him.
Well, I mean, I have been listening to quite a few people saying very similar things to where a large cut on contact, center mass, guaranteed you'll get it every time. Where a lot of people get
or the coyotes is going to find it.
Well, yeah.
You're going to retrieve that deer.
Yeah, so. you're going to, it's going to be a dead deer.
Yep.
Where a lot of people get hung up on that inside pocket just in front of the shoulder, and then they kind of yank at the last minute, and then it's a shoulder shot.
I'm raising my hand right now, folks, because I've done it, I do it, and it's bad.
Yeah, we've all done it.
Mid body is good. That you're going to retrieve that deer.
Well, it's funny, just on this little side rabbit hole is like, Ernie always says, he's like, I shoot for the last two ribs.
Yeah.
And like, that's,
yeah,
that seems so far back. Like if you're looking at that front pocket or that front shoulder, but when you look at the deer, like, you know, deconstructed, you're like, man, that's,
there's stuff there that make it die.
Yeah, you got a lot of good stuff right there, you know?
But I feel like that was a good rabbit hole to go down though, because we were touching on the whole target panic thing and tailgate ready and training is you don't have to train to try to shoot 11s or 12s or whatever on a 3D target. Shoot to kill. Wherever you're going to plan on killing that deer at, when it's in the woods, when it steps out in front of you, shoot there.
So I guess what I was asking when I was saying, how do you look at like Vegas versus TAC as far as like shot placement, like shot process, everything is the same?
It's exactly the same for me. Like when, like just going back to that, the cone or the 20 yard line, or the imaginary line at the caribou target. It's, when my feet touch and I look down at whatever target I'm shooting at, that's when the process starts. That's when it's go time. That's where it's, I'm going all in, and I'm going to commit to all my steps, all my practice, all my process, and tailgate ready right there. That's it. And a lot of people need to remember is the first thing you need to do is figure out where that arrow is going to go. You know, if it's going to go 20 yards or if it's going to go how far ever, figure that out, where you want to put it on that target, and then kick your feet in, set your feet, and then take off from there and draw your bow back. However you draw it back. And hopefully everyone by now, after listening to enough podcasts and listen to enough people that are expert at this game, you know, there's a process that you should go through with every shot. And so the feet, it starts at the feet after you figure out where you're going to put that arrow. And you set those feet, and that's the starting point. And I see way too many people, they get their bow back and they pick their feet up and they move a foot, they shuffle something. That changes everything. You got to start over. You should let down. You should let down and start over. And with a hunting scenario, it's different. Because, I mean, I've walked with my bow at full draw or crawled or stood up from the ground. I mean,
drawing my bow laying on my back.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do some things when it comes to hunting. But if you're spending $15 per arrow to shoot for a caribou or shoot for a truck at the caribou, you want to make sure that your feet are good and then start your process.
And so in that process for Vegas, or we'll say Colorado or Crystal Mountain or flat ass Tennessee, where does elevation come in, and does that change anything?
That's where you jump back to what Andrew and I were talking about. Don't just spend $15 and just chucking arrow down and say, oh, I tried for the truck, I didn't get it. Spend that dollar amount, whatever the person running the tax shoot that day says, hey, if you spend this much money, you get one arrow free or you get two arrows free. Spend that amount of money. And that way you can send a couple scouts down there and get an idea if you have to move your site or where to hold. And that way it's actually going to give you a chance at getting that, get close to that, that inside out on the 11.
And so for your training for this, and I mean, I feel like John probably already knows the answer, but like, how big is that circle? Because everybody who's shooting for the truck doesn't have a caribou. So when you're talking about that mental picture in your mind, where you're getting that sight picture, you're getting that repetition, you know, these guys that like visualize it and see it and do it and all this stuff, like, what would you say is the best way for a guy to visually be able to know what they need to hit at that distance? I mean, obviously the smallest thing you can hit at 111, but you still got to be able to see it. You still got to be able to send it. Like,
yeah.
About the size of a chew can.
Yeah. Chew can, bushlight.
Bushlight can, chew can, about somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the size of it. But so let's go down. First tip and trick for the shooting the caribou. So I like to sight in at home to where my pin is at the top of the caribou. I've only said this to a few people, but now this is going to be public knowledge, is I like to sight in for the top of the caribou. And that way,
you have a perfect line.
There is something to give you a height that caribou is so big and it's so easy to get your pin lost in there that, you just don't have a good reference. I mean, sometimes you get lucky and the shadow's just right to where there's a shadow or a gleam of light that's hitting that chew can size or that bush light spot where you need to hold the pin. But you have to sit there all day and just hope that the shadow or the sun hits that thing just right.
I say last year there was a little nick that was in like the bottom right-hand corner when we were down in Tennessee. So you kind of knew you had to be right in that little pocket or just above that. So it kind of gave you a reference. But other than that, most of the time it's just kind of a big gray blob across there.
And then when the caribou came to Michigan, they flipped it to the other side.
Yeah, so.
So that was gone. But yeah, so the first tip and trick is sight in at home to where your pin is at the top of the target. So the first thing is to do is find a target that's similar to the size of the caribou. You know, if you're just shooting a block of foam or your bale, like what else can I think of? Your target or that you're shooting at, you know, not necessarily a paper target or whatever, but your target, your bale, what you're shooting at should be roughly the size of the caribou. So I have a cardboard box that I stuffed with, this is another tip or trick for everyone, DIYers, stuff with boat shrink wrap, cardboard box, stuff with boat shrink wrap, pack it in there tight, and then I shrink wrap the outside of that cardboard box, and that's the same size as the caribou body. That's what I have at home to sight in it. So I can put my pin at the top of that cardboard box, and it will hit the middle of that cardboard box, my arrow will. So it's dropping that much in there.
I've thought in the past about trying to find like the armpit or, you know, like say you have a positive point, but like you're saying, if it's one way or the other,
you're
going to be off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to pretty much have the exact dimensions of the target in order, you know, for something like that to get a positive point.
Yeah. And with mine, you know, just building a DIY target is you don't have to have it exactly perfect. You just want that pin to where you're holding on the top of that caribou and your arrow hits below it, below your pin.
Then you can adjust.
And then you just, so this is tip or trick number two, do not adjust your sight when you get to the caribou. Do not adjust your sight. Adjust your feet. Step back from the line. He won't let you step too any closer. but step back from the line and let your arrows drop in. And so you're not taking big steps. You're taking baby steps. No one's going to see you doing this as you just step back a little bit and your arrows will start dropping in. You got to spend more money.
Right.
But when you move your sight at that distance, it's going a long ways.
Right.
I mean, we're talking like 6 inches, 8 inches. I mean, you're going to start missing. Then you're going to start second guessing yourself. And then you'll be cranking your sight the other way. And then you're going to get freaked out.
Right.
This is where it comes back to tailgate ready. Spend your money at home with your wife. Give her that $15 for every arrow. Make sure that that arrow is going to be close to hitting at home. And then go up there, spend your money. Don't move your sight and just adjust your feet. So there's wind too. There's wind, there's sun, you know, there's elements that you have to take into play. And so we can go to tip number three is get there early or get there late, because usually in the middle of the day it's windy.
And at Crystal, they had a big white board.
Oh, yeah.
For us right-handed shooters that was right in your face.
Because we're at the ski lesson area.
Yep. And it was so blinding that when you draw back to full draw, it would be so hard to even focus on your pin because you're just getting blasted with all this side light. And middle of the day was horrendous to even try to shoot it.
And that's what you were talking about before, John, was like getting there first thing in the morning. Isn't that when you won the Bronc box? Was like first thing in the morning?
No, it was very end of the day.
Was that that was 3 years ago?
That was Bronc box.
Like
that was like our
4 years ago.
Yeah,
four or five.
At Boyne, you won the Bronc box. Yeah. Yeah. And that was quite the package, Jen, wasn't it?
That's a nice box. Yeah.
But wasn't there stuff inside of it too?
No.
It was just the box.
Just the box.
Okay. All right.
But that was inside out at what, 55 or 65?
It was 60.
Mm-hmm.
And a little 1-inch square.
And so you showed up early, shot your arrows.
No, we actually, so they're actually packing up.
So it was later in the day.
It was at the very end.
And so this is what I'm talking about, people. This is another tip or trick from John, later in the day.
Yeah, it was right.
Sun's going down.
And it was cloudy. Calm. It was cloudy. Actually, a storm was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And we had already packed
up. But was it windy though?
It wasn't real windy. No.
Yeah, but clouds are moving in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was overcast. It wasn't bright.
Which makes a difference, everyone, is lighting is a big play on targets. And your peep sight or your scope, you know, it changes a lot. You want to have a dull pin. Don't be afraid to bring some tape with you or a credit card or something to cover your sight up if you need to.
Yeah, so back then I was shooting a 10.
Mm-hmm, which is small.
Blue,
okay.
So,
but a blue is well known in the 3D world as like the ideal color.
Right, real, you know, real dull.
Neutral.
Yeah.
You should say, yeah.
Neutral.
Mm-hmm. And so you wheeled that thing.
Yeah, I got it. My brother is the one who wanted to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, so he actually took off. I'm like, all right, well, I'll be up there in a minute. And I think it was only like $5 to shoot. So I had like $35 left or something. So
spend it all.
So I gave him $20 and I shot, and two of my arrows were literally like on the square touching just off the edge. I'm like, well, shit, I better. Like, so I gave him 15 more. I'm like, if I hit it before my money's up, you're going to give me cash back? And he's like, yeah. First shot, I just ripped it, you know, way left. Next shot, pinwheeled it. And he gave me $5 back. And my brother is like, well, I still have like 3 shots. Like, go ahead and shoot.
Yeah.
But.
So pin size for you, like, is there any difference preference?
Oh, it's at that? Small, a 10 for sure. Yep. Shoot a 10. Yeah. Yep. And make it as almost as dull as possible, I feel like, to where it's not star brighting, to where it's really bursting out, to where, because at that distance, when you're over 100 yards, a pin turns big quick. So, for indoors, so I shoot bow hunter for indoors. Like you saw a Lancaster, I was shooting bow hunter. And so for that, I took the fiber out of my up pin, and to where now it's just a giant black up pin with a large pin on top of it with no fiber through it. It used to have a fiber coming through it. So now it's just black and it seems to work really good. Like, it's definitely too big to shoot outside and stuff, but for indoors, it's working really good for me. But for outdoors, it's nice to have just a little touch of color. Like a blue is probably the best. I mean, but it's not as common. That's like something you need to, you know, look for, you know, major tournament scopes have them. Not like run of the mill bow hunter scopes have a blue fiber in it, because it's not ideal for killing scenarios. I feel like of the blue colors, unless you spend the money like on the light system you have, like with, what do you call that light system?
The ETAC.
Yeah. With the light system like that, you can make any pin look good, because there's so many
settings,
range of settings to where you really can get that pin dialed right in. Yeah.
And now for arrows, like, I see you got a bunch of different arrows here. And like I was saying, like, that's kind of where this had started. Like, I asked Travis like years ago, like, do you build special arrows? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, he wasn't really ready to give out the info.
Now I'm like, screw it. I got two trucks in the bag. Everyone needs to get a truck. So at that distance, I'm going to plug Dudley. Dudley's doing it right. So he's selling arrows out of a roll. Like, he's buying a roll of carbon, and you're getting a dozen out of that same roll. You're not getting just arrows that are just made and they just grab arrows and here you go. You know, you don't really know what you're getting. And so with like these arrows I have in front of me, they are high-end outdoor target arrows. I don't know the price ranges on here, but I mean, we're pushing this Fireknock one. So did you guys talk to Fireknock when you were at TAC last year?
I don't think so.
Don't do it.
No, everyone needs to talk to Fireknock.
He will give you zero faith in your setup.
So Dr. Wu, he sold me on his arrows. So he batches his arrows and has his carbon built with you know, only the finest, and his arrows all match and stuff like that, and his components are the best. And so this cost me quite a bit for this dozen arrows, and I wanted to see how it would do at 113 yards. And so I just said, I'm shooting 70 pounds, 28 and a half inches, out of a medium aggressive cam. You know, it's a hunting cam, but I forget what cam, how would you say it? It's not like a super speed cam, you know, it's more of a medium hunting cam out of my compound bow. And so he came up with this arrow for me, and I wish I knew the tip weight. The FOC is, it's about average, I would say, for an arrow. But Fireknock, they have their knocks too that are extremely well built. And knocks are so awful. There's so many bad knocks out there. And so it's worth spending the money on a premium knock for your arrow. Not necessarily, you know, just buying a Fireknock or it doesn't have to be Fireknock. Like Biter makes a great knock. And there's other companies that make great knocks too, but test your knocks by shooting them if you're capable of it, or just spending the money on a premium knock to where it's going to rule out any flyers, really. Because at that distance, 111 yards, it's easy not to have your arrows hit together. And so, like with this Fireknock arrow that I'm holding in my hands, it has a number on it. It says 392, and I got a grain scale in front of me. We're gonna see how much this arrow weighs and see if that's, let me zero it out, and It says 373. So I'm wrong. 372.7. That's what this guy wrote on it. So Fire Knot guy does not build his arrows. He has a guy, and I believe his name is Jeremy, like his custom arrow builder. And so he built these arrows for me, and I'd say every one of these arrows are just perfect, and they shoot so good. And it was easy to hit the caribou with this arrow setup. So what I'm getting at is it's worth spending money on a dozen arrows just for the caribou.
One thing I took away, like in all of the time that we've been doing this podcast, and even prior to that, like shooting with John and having John like explain bows and arrows to me instead of like, you know, go buy some arrows off the shelf, just shoot them. The one thing that I've probably taken away more so than anything is like the importance of like knock fit and like
knock
tolerances and all that, and then knock pinch and all the different things.
You can have a perfectly built arrow and put a shitty knock in it, or have the wrong serving, center serving, so you don't have the right, and it's just going to shoot like shit. Like your consistency is going to be terrible.
That is true. And Andrew, we were just messing around with his new bow and trying to get it to tune for indoors at 20 yards. And really it carries on for bow hunting or shooting tack, is you need to show up with a tuned bow as well. You know, you want your bow tuned and your arrows tuned to your bow. So, I mean, there's work and steps and a process that needs to be taken in before you just go there. And that's where tailgate ready comes in, is, you know, you need to put the time in to where your bow is dialed in for those arrows. And then the knock pinch is just right. I mean, there's so many.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
Variables, and you just need to get rid of all those things to where the only thing you have to worry about is putting your boots on the ground and making them shots count.
So one thing, because we don't have any video with this podcast or anything, you know, you're showing some like really toothpick arrows. I mean, you could have like a perfectly set up. Are these 27s that were flying out there that are just perfect, or what are we doing?
the what? The 27s?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just for the guy, because they might say, I got those. You know, I shoot Vegas too, so I'm going to send them.
What I have in front of me is this, the one that I'm holding to where you could like punch it in on your phone or your computer, is a Carbon Express Nano XR, and this spline is a 490. So this is more for that 65-70 pound bow. So it's tiny. I wish I brought like a caliper to measure the size of it, but it's only the size of, say, I mean, what do you guys got for reference for this?
It's probably less than a 4 mil.
Yeah, there we go. It's less than a 4 mil. So this arrow will fit inside of like a standard hunting arrow. So like
the 204,
the 204. Yep, the standard Carbon Express, a 1913 aluminum arrow. You know, it'll fit inside of that arrow. So it's a tiny little arrow, but. And I'm shooting small veins on it as well with, and this is another thing, you know, there's a few guys online that say you have to run a helical, a big offset or whatever. And mine are just 2 degree. I run 2 degree offset, maybe even less than that, just a small offset on my veins. Cause at that distance, I don't want to be losing too much speed. I want this arrow to carry down there and go behind the pin as close as possible. And so there's a lot of talk about, you know, you need to run a big helical or big offset or whatever. And I'm not a believer in that. I like to run a pretty straight fletch on mine and a smaller fletch.
So do you, and we talked a little bit about this like beforehand and stuff like that, but so all of these things are going to, like kind of stack on top of each other to be more accurate or to be able to, I guess, build up to your potential, right? Mm-hmm. And are these tips and tricks going to help a mediocre shooter be able to put one in? Or, I mean, because we all see the guys out there. We all know those guys. Some of us are those guys who have their bow. They dust it off a little bit before pack. And they, I mean, my brother-in-law is the epitome. And he, I mean, this guy could probably shoot right with you if he just put in, you
a
know,
a little bit of effort.
Because he'll go out there and he's picking up other people's arrows off of the course because he's lost them all.
Still hitting.
And he's hitting. And he's like, well, this arrow hits right where I'm aiming it. So this is going to be my arrow for the rest of the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I'm sure that there's guys that do that put him in there at 111. So like for that guy who's like, oh, I've never freaking done anything, you know, and I'm hitting, mm-hmm. you know, I was in for the truck last year. Like where does equipment and ability like cross paths or how do those two curves meet?
Just in a session, I guess. I think that's probably what it comes down to. I mean, not so much like in a, you know, this is my hobby, you know, shooting a bow is my hobby and, you know, this is what I do. So, you know, obviously those guys, they have other things to do and, they don't like to put the effort into shooting their bow that much. So I recommend just shoot your bow more. And
but let me give you an example.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, so you won the truck with somebody else's bow.
Oh yeah.
But you walked in here. I'm shooting at five spots. I can't hit the damn X on five shots. You're like, hey, let me see how that bow is. And you shoot two or three X's.
Inside out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like with my bow and you're like, well, the bow's pretty good. So like, that's what I'm kind of talking about is with the guy behind the bow versus the equipment.
But I just put time into this. So I get what I put into, I get it out of it.
I think what you're trying to get at is it's more or less, I mean, at the end of the day, that kind of distance, there's so many variables. I mean, it comes down to everything. You can get lucky and get one in there, but it's more or less on, you know, are those people that, you know, just barely dust their bows out before hunt season, are they consistently getting in there versus just randomly dropping one in there and then, you know, the next 10, they're not even anywhere close versus where, you know, somebody that practices more often, you know, they're going to be consistently right in where they need to be at and, you know, stand a better chance at consistently getting more arrows in.
And then in your mind, because, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously you're saying everybody should be shooting more indoor leagues. They should be shooting paper. They should be shooting their bows more. They should be doing all this stuff. Who do you think should be shooting for the truck, right? So, like, Should everybody that's there, or there are some people that like have no business doing it?
I feel like if anyone just has shot that far and they have a pin for that distance, they should spend, you know, more than $15 and shoot a couple of arrows at it.
There might be a few people online that think Travis has no business shooting for it anymore.
But yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if... Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's all about the look, you know, because when we go up to TAC and you're in the golf cart, like going back up and forth.
Whoa. Like it's that was just that point. They don't do that at Crystal.
But it was like, oh, geez. I mean, I guess he does get special treatment.
I wouldn't say a special treatment. If you spend money, then, you know.
Yeah, they know who their top spenders are and they treat them very well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a business at the end of the day and.
Yeah.
It's just a business that they enjoy.
Yeah, no, I mean, But I'm just saying, like, you know, just as like a, if I didn't know who you were, if I like didn't know you personally, mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh yeah, of course he's going to win. You know what I mean?
I guess. But so like, I think I missed one tack at Boyne when it was at Boyne. I think the first year I pulled in there and just checked it out and talked to people, and I did not shoot or, you know, didn't know. I just went in there and just, there was a couple of vendors that I knew and I talked to them and talked to, I don't know if Corey was running it then the first year or not.
I think he was.
He was running the very first year up there at Boyne.
I don't know if it was the very first year.
Yeah. Well,
the first year we went, that was when they were still, the caribou was at 150.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go inside out on a dime.
Well, it was the orange dot, wasn't it?
Yeah, the orange dot.
The orange
about
dot.
The size of a dime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And no one won it for, finally, I think they gave that truck away. It had like 200,000 miles on it or something.
Canadian won it, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, yeah, I was up there for that, and so I didn't shoot it then. And then when it came, gosh, I didn't shoot.
I think you won the truck when it was the first year they had the new truck.
They brought it to the shorter distance, right?
Yeah, when they had the new Chevy.
Yeah, because I didn't shoot it when it was at that distance because I was working up there for Carbon Express then at Boyne. And I hung out up there, but I didn't shoot at it because it was 150. And I feel like 150 is just a little too far.
Oh, yeah. It was.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to have an arrow slash bow set up for that distance. I mean, even with these little arrows I have in front of me, we're looking at all three of these. I weighed all three of these tiny little target arrows, and they're all at 370, right around there, give or take 8 grains. And for my 70 pounds at 28 and a half inches, 150 is just not possible for me to go that far with 370. And, yeah, I don't think I'd spend the money on it. And I didn't.
No.
Yeah. But at 111, 110, 113, most bows are going to be able to reach that distance. Yep. And especially with aiming over the top of it, like I was saying. So, I mean, there is antlers on that caribou too. So you could sight in for antler as well.
Right. So you're saying, you just keep saying 113, and I think we always looked at it as like 111. So I feel like that's tip number five.
Okay. So, you know, you get there and you hit your rangefinder on it. And most rangefinders do not compensate at that distance for elevation and stuff like that. They usually blank out over 100 yards. That's from just what I've experienced. I don't have a real expensive rangefinder. I mean, maybe now there's a better one, you know, but the one I have, it doesn't give me a number for over 100, you know, a cut number. And so what I'm saying by that, everyone, is like you have your rangefinder set up in bow mode and you're a tree stand and you click it and the deer's at 30 yards and you click it and it says 30, but shoot for 28. Right. And so, I just like to show off with my pin set at 113, and that way I can just take a step back and it's going to be good, or two steps back.
But another tip for everyone out there with one pin sliders or multiple pin sliders, use whatever rangefinder you sighted your bow in with, even out on the course. I know I always have guys like, oh, what was that range? I'll tell them, well, my range finder's 5 yards different than theirs. They shoot it, they miss, and they're like, well, what the hell? You know, you told me it was that. And make sure you use the rangefinder you sighted your bow in with.
That is a big tip.
I always shoot my own rangefinder. Like
last year on one course, we were shooting 12 guys. So yeah. We didn't have time. We were,
yep.
Give me a range.
Give me a number. Yeah.
64 to 68. Like, okay. All right.
But with a group like that, if I'm shooting a group like that, I'm not necessarily trying to hit the middle every time. Right. I'm just trying to hit that target and get onto the next target. Yep.
That was the epitome of shooting with your bros.
Shooting. Then it was like shooting through, like, can I get it through that?
Yeah.
The tree? Can I shoot? There was one where, like, I didn't even, couldn't even see the target. There was a bush because everyone was over here. I'm like, I'm going to put it over the bush.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some of the best practice right there. It's just,
that's fun.
And if it's safe, you know, like the previous one I brought up, you know, you got to make sure what your surroundings are and stuff like that. Cause some of those targets are, they do really good setting up their courses, but you know, there's always that one or two targets to where it's like a little questionable.
Well, last year we had a girl walk down, like she must have been lost with a group. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I'm done with this, so I'm walking back. Right down through the knock-on course where I'm like, everyone's like, wait, hey. So Adam, you called Corey, or who'd you call?
Sean.
Said, like, hey, there's a woman walking right down the middle of the course. Like, mm-hmm. Holy shit, that was sketchy.
Yeah.
But yeah, when we're doing it, we're like, when we shot that, we were the last group on the course.
Yeah. So,
and so we were like,
so it's good. Yep. Safe. That's good.
Except for the guy next to us that blew his bow up.
Well, that was 2 years ago. But
yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
Forgot to put arrow in.
Which is a very common deal. Guy I shot with almost did it. And it was at the start of the Sitka course. It was right after you, or the prime course, right after you get off the lift. There's that big downhill shot. And, you know, we were partying the night before, and there might have been a little bit of a hangover factor in there. And he draws back, and I just happen to look over, and I'm like, let down. And he lets down. He's like, what? I'm like, put an arrow in that thing. He's like, oh, dude, you just saved me. He's like, that would have been horrible to blow it up on target number one.
Yeah, he was standing right next to me when that thing went off, and it was like, shit went flying. Like, holy. And there was actually
two targets before that, there's three guys that were at full draw with no arrows on,
like, let down.
Yeah. And that's part of going back to that tailgate ready is you have to show up to anytime you shoot your bow is with a process to where that's part of your process, you know, is where's this arrow going to go, you know, and then put the arrow in your bow, or your arrow is already in your bow, but you know, it's just part of that process, which we hear so much of from, you know, Turner. And then there's a lot of other guys talking about you have to have a process when you're shooting your bow. And I've always been a firm believer in that is, you know, have a process and take that process with you every time you're shooting your bow, wherever you're shooting your bow. And it definitely makes you a better archer.
I think if we circle all the way back to like that target panic thing, just because, you know, I had so many conversations with so many people about this and been going on for years and years and years. And I think finally, like going to shooting this hinge and like having it set so far apart mm-hmm. that I have the time to actually think about it.
Oh yeah.
That's what has done it. And you, for guys that are listening and they're like, yeah, I know I got a process like that. Like, I know all of the stuff, you know, and John walked in here and said, yeah, there's a podcast with Joel Turner. Like, yeah, I understand it. I know all the things except for that, the disconnect between just being in control of the actual shot in.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos, speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Now it's so, there's so much time between the click. That the click doesn't bother me. Even like when I draw back and it clicks over here, I'm like, okay, just bring it to my face. It's okay. If it doesn't click out there, then it's like, okay, well, I got a long way to go until it clicks. And then once it clicks, it's like, okay, now I need to get just focus on.
Yeah.
You got a lot of movement out here if you're clicking out there with that release. Holy.
No, I mean, I feel like I do the same thing what he's doing. When I walked in here and he was shooting, that seemed like the perfect point to click is right now I have my arms up and I'm drawing back. When I'm drawing back, that click is happening before you even get into your cheek. Because that way, you know, you're stretched out far enough and it's time to get that string and get behind your peep and start getting on the target.
But like I had to take the sight off the bow, and you know, Andy May talked about it, you know, all these guys have talked about it so much. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, that's ridiculous. So, but I was like, all right, well, I now I know, cause it's difficult with a thumb release or a caliper, trigger or whatever, because you're just
plucking it.
Yeah. And I feel like even with a back tension, there's nothing, there's like no tactical sound that says, okay, like now I'm off the porch or whatever Joel Turner says, you know?
No, yeah.
So like, with that, it's, with the back tension, like the silverback, once you take your finger off the safety, now you're in it.
I know. But there's no, but it's the same thing as like, I could do the same thing. It's like, once I like got the full draw, once I move my thumb over to the trigger or whatever, like it's easy to say that, but it's hard to like really believe and execute that, because you can always just click it. And so like, that's what it took for me to like do that. And so like that's coming in here and shooting spots. And like, that's why I didn't shoot I had to work this week, so I didn't shoot our indoor league, but like out of 420,
mm-hmm.
like when I like lost everything, like I shot 220, I missed the whole target twice.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then I shot like 260, and then I shot like 280, and then I shot 315 last week. And so like I'm moving in the right direction. And
now you're going to do better, because now your pin's closer.
Having control.
Yeah.
And so like, that's why I was like, John's like, I didn't bring my bow. I didn't know I was supposed to bring my bow. And I'm like, I have to figure out this shooting at this distance, because I can shoot at 7 yards in my basement all day long and I have control over it, but it's way different when the pin's down there and I can't like focus on exactly where I need to do. So I need to still stay in that. And I think that's important at tack, because you make that one bad shot and you were saying you want to come back to that, the like sweeping like target panic on the caribou or whatever, because that's what it was. Like when I lost it at tack, it was like, I couldn't, because I didn't have a spot to aim at. And, you know, mm-hmm. I've found at shooting at 7 yards, you know, I'm shooting at like either arrow holes or like, I'm shooting at like the big shot, like the bullseye in the shot or the center of the bees, you know, and I'm hitting those, but I'm able to like focus on that. And then for the first time in my life, I'm allowed to like let the pin float instead of just be like, oh my God, I think it's on the thing, you know?
Oh, I just have a hard time talking about that, because I mean, I guess I've tasted a little bit of panic here and there, but it's never to the point to where I've had to like start over and rethink everything and start from the ground up like you did. It's just, I just always been just lucky at that point. And that's where, going back to the putting the boots and setting your feet, you know, that's just my start of my process. And I feel like my process is so strong and ingrained in me to where it gets me through all those bad times and keeps me away from the target panic and stuff like that. So like, you watch people on the Lancaster stage, you know, I was lucky enough to be up there this year. And, I mean, there's people that fall apart up there. Which is so easy to do. You're on stage, there's a microphone in front of you. A little bit of the time there's bright lights on you, there's a camera on you, everyone's watching. And so having something to fall back on, a shot process, something to think about other than everything else that's going around is so important. And tailgate ready, that's where it comes into, is tailgate ready and being ready to make a good shot when it comes time, you know, either you're in the woods or at tack on the shooting for the truck or on the first bail, or the first target at tack with your buddies, you know, tailgate ready. You got to be there. You got to put some time in before you go somewhere and shoot your bow.
What your draw cycle, I was watching when we first got here. As you're drawing the bow back, you're looking up, are you looking at your top cam? Or you just, is it just your...
It's just part of it, just making sure that thing's going to come back safely, really. Oh. Yeah. The peep, the sight, the cam,
I was just, no,
just,
I mean,
just looking at everything and seeing how it is.
Yeah, I was just wondering. It's like, depending on which bow I'm shooting, I always look up and just see how that the string's coming off the cam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just looking at the alignment, because I'm
probably not getting into it that far mentally. Oh. It's just like a look, but I know where you're. Go ahead, keep going. I know where you're coming from.
I have issues like with my, depending on which bow I'm shooting, mm-hmm. like my grip, and so my grip is my biggest downfall, because I'll notice like if I'm light on my thumb, and if I look up, I can see the cam.
A tweak in it.
I got a tweak in it. So I'm like, oh, I got to,
yeah,
you know, but
that's good. That's good. I mean, that's definitely a good point to bring up and for people to be aware of for sure. But, I feel like you can get rid of that by just making it part of your process to where, see, this is going, cause I remember we talked about this the last podcast. It's just, I was really preaching about the steps, the process, and I was kept going back to that, and I'm going to go back to that right now. So I always start with my feet.
Right.
I mean, first thing first, where's the target at? What target am I on? How am I going to shoot this? You know, stuff like that. Range, you know, it depends on where you're at, inside or outside. You know, how far is this thing? Do I need to look at it? Where's this arrow going to go? All that. But it starts with the boots. Set those feet. Put your bow, you know, the arrow's already in my bow. You know, we're going to jump back to that because we just mentioned it, how many people draw back their bow without an arrow in it. But get that arrow in that bow. I mean, that's like one of those things that, in my mind, it just happens. As long as there's no one downrange, that arrow is in my bow when I'm on the line or on the cone or at tack shooting for the truck, and, you know, whoever's running, taking the money, line's clear, you know, go for it when you're ready. That arrow's in my bow, and I'm either taking two steps up there, trying to figure out where I'm going to stand. So arrow's in the bow. I know where the arrow's going. Feet on the ground. Feet are set. Put the hand on the grip and give it a little push. And I like to look at that and see what that push is like, feel what that push is like. And the fingers, make sure my fingers are good. I mean, I don't do this. I don't tell myself all this stuff all the time, but it's just, that's what I'm doing. There's a thousand things that I'm doing and just a few simple steps in my shot process. But, you know, all that is going through how much pressure, you know, so I don't have to think about, oh, my cam. Well, so and my string, and I don't have to think about that stuff.
I do the same exact process. I mean, it's all like feet, and then I'm already got my arrow in, and I do the same thing. I always put my hand in the grip, and the way then bring my fingers. But I don't know, at some point, like I don't, for a while. So last year, I didn't even get to shoot because I injured my neck, and I couldn't even draw my bow back.
Too much working, wasn't it?
And so yeah, and so. I didn't even, like, I literally, well, I shot, what, the last 2 weeks of our league.
Of league night here.
And then I didn't pick up a bow again until we went to tack.
Oh, wow. So you weren't tailgate ready at all.
I wasn't ready, period.
But you still, you showed up with a mental shot process, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But so somewhere in the, like, I still, every once in a while, like, during the draw cycle or whatever, I don't know if I just loosen up my grip a little bit or whatever, but that's like my check is what, yep, I'm looking up.
And that's part of your process, and that's great to have. I mean, and as bow hunters, we need to give the respect to the animal to where we have a shot process and a confidence in that shot we're going to make, that it's going to be the best we can. I know mistake happens, you know, mistakes do happen, and I've done plenty and stuff like that, but at least, you know, we should have it to where we're almost perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I think 3D is like what we were saying earlier, is like you either shoot for the score or you're shooting to say like, oh, it's dead.
It's dead.
Well, I could shoot him in the eyeball and it's dead, you know, and be like, well, you know, well, I killed him. Like, and you just completely blew the shot. And then that's the whole tack thing. It's like, phone's your friend. Like, I shot him in the nose, but like, I still hit the target. Oh, yeah. So,
you know, I know like where my layup shots, like, you know, oh, there's a tree right by his vitals. I'm not shooting at his vitals. I'm shooting for foam in his ass. It's wide open.
The arrow is tough to pull, though, in the ass. I know that. I've done that a few times.
And there's re-rod.
But then,
yeah,
it's like, you fucker, you laid up? What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like you said, it can give us bad habits by just shooting at foam and doing all this stuff. And I think, well, but just by doing that and saying, okay, I just want to hit foam. Yeah. Yeah. And you have a whole bunch of excuses. Well, at least I hit the foam or it's dead. But I've had this conversation a lot of different times in a lot of different ways, but it's so hard if you don't practice, if you don't put in like the effort shooting your bow ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because when that animal shows up and you have all that adrenaline, and instead of saying, and especially if you mess up on your first try that year, you know, mm-hmm. you're not saying like, this animal's dead. Like, this is going to be 12 ring. Like, you're saying, don't miss, don't miss, don't miss.
That's instead the of- worst. So dude, you put the animal in the freezer, you put it on the wall, you put it on the tailgate of your truck, you're showing your buddies, and you haven't even killed that thing yet. I mean, I'm guilty of that. So at 20 yards, it's so easy to do. Last night, shooting them 60 arrows that I posted on Instagram and tagged you in, it was easy to think about hanging that target on the wall and chalking it up as, I got all these before I even shot them all. No, you can't do that. You got to go back to your process. Put your feet on each side of that line, knock that arrow, and run through that process for every arrow until it's over with, till it's done, till that animal's on the ground, till you're touching it, till it's in the back of your truck, till you're eating it, and then it's on your wall. Don't be putting it, don't be putting, what do they say, the cart in front of the horse. Don't do that. It's so easy to do, though. I've been caught up in that many times, but simplifying things and having a process is so much better for archery in general. So much better.
So, John, are you going to commit to shooting for the truck this year? You always say you're going to, and then you say,
I'd say,
oh,
this
I have
is
a shot.
The year.
Well,
buy yourself a dozen arrows that are in good high quality, fletch them with a little degree offset. And so there is such thing as clocking. I know some people say it's a myth or whatever and all that stuff. It's good to clock an arrow and to see which way you want to fletch it, right or left.
Do you have, like, so looking at this setup, and these are, you know, sub 400 grain arrows for mm-hmm. a 70 pound shooter,
yeah,
65, 70 pound shooter. Do you have a preferred, I mean, you know, so back when we first started this and we were like looking at, okay, like what Dudley is shooting and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was saying like 280 feet per second was like the best arrow flight. Like,
yeah, there's a sweet spot with speed for sure. Like 287.
So is that what you're building these for? Or?
I have no clue. I don't own a chronograph, but it feels about that.
Looks from your eye-chrometer, it's pretty good.
So,
close.
So, Andrew and I, we've been working and talking about this quite a bit. This, the last few weeks is build your arrow, you know, and, you have a poundage. Okay, for going into shooting over 100 yards is you have an idea of where you want to be on poundage, say. You know, you want to be in the higher. You want to be closer to that 70 pounds, I feel. I mean, not everyone needs to be. You can go to a lighter poundage, I guess.
I would say like a comfortable poundage for you.
Comfortable poundage, yeah. That sounds better. But you have a poundage, an ideal poundage that you feel comfortable shooting and holding weight that you feel comfortable shooting. But then you can build your arrows and then mess with your poundage from there. So you're getting back there and you're not seeing a group really that you want to see down there. And so I'm talking about over 100 yards shooting and trying to shoot a group. So you turn your poundage down or turn your poundage up and see what those arrows do then. And so you're making those arrows shoot better for you by tuning your poundage.
Finding the sweet spot.
A sweet spot for those arrows.
Yeah, with your bow. Mm-hmm. At the poundage that they like the best.
Exactly. Yep.
And obviously everybody wants to shoot, you know, a chew size can at 100 yards or whatever. But what's realistic for even for the size of your pin? So like a 10, you know, if mm-hmm. you were shooting a rifle, you'd look at like minute of accuracy, but the dot might, you know, shooting red dots, it's a 3 minute dot or it's a 1 minute dot or whatever. So, I mean, you can only shoot a group as big as your pin is
mm-hmm.
down there.
Well, ideally you want them all touching.
Well, yeah. But I mean, what's acceptable for you? Like you better be busting knocks at 100.
I mean, ideally, but a golf ball is good enough for me.
Yeah, for 10 arrows or what?
Three.
Okay.
Three arrows. Because I really don't want to shoot. I'll shoot, you know, say I build a dozen arrows for shooting long range. I'll shoot them all, but I'll do, going back to what Andrew and I were talking about, is shoot them one at a time, like on a fresh piece of paper, and just to see how that one arrow performs. And so this, going back to tailgate ready, everyone, is you should spend that much time with your setup and with your arrows, but one arrow at a time to see what it does. And that way, 'cause I'm guilty of it. Like this arrow that I'm grabbing right now, it's, has blue fletch, and I took this, I think I only had like 9 that year. I took them up to TAC, and they shot really good for me at home, so I took them up there, and I just took all 9 of them, paid the money, and started shooting them. And there was arrows that wouldn't hit behind the pin, and I was like, "What the heck?" You know, bad knocks, change a couple knocks out. There's just a couple arrows that wouldn't shoot good. So, get rid of those arrows before you go up there, because you're wasting money. I was wasting money. You know, I was hoping maybe the wind would push them in or something like that, but they wouldn't even hit 10s really. So I was sorting arrows up there at TAC, shooting at $15 per arrow, and spend that time at home and sort those arrows at home one at a time. It will save you money. It'll save you time when you're up there. And
you're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app. I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from HuntStand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.
Yeah, it would be way better.
And so this is something that I think what I'm hearing in there, like at least I can translate to like something that I'm familiar with, is like when I was in the Marines, like shooting 500 yards, 200 mm-hmm. yards, you know, I'm old enough so that it was open sights and all this stuff. And I never like had the confidence in myself. So I always thought that like, I didn't trust I trusted the equipment and thought that I was always wrong. So like if they were hitting left, like I never adjusted the shot. I was always like, oh, it's just me, you know, just like shooting here. Like, well, I was shooting it all, everything was shooting right. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, it's gotta be me. Like, I gotta be doing something.
Move that sight.
Like, jack the sight. So but in this case, you're saying like, trust yourself as a shooter. And it's yeah. like, it's the equipment, right? So like those changes
to a point.
Yeah, if you're hitting at home and then you're up there with the same arrows and
exactly,
you know, mm-hmm. so you're saying take the stuff and trust the equipment. Mm-hmm. And then
when you're in that final situation, paying that money for that arrow, trust what you showed up with. And trust what you showed up with, but do the work at home, show up tailgate ready. And make sure she's tuned. I mean, you're lucky you have a good bow mechanic and someone to get you relatively on the board close enough to where, you know, that didn't sound good.
It always does that.
But, you know, have a pro shop or someone that knows more than you do. And so that's what.
John, you're in trouble.
that's what I weigh out a lot of options. So like going back to this Fire Knock arrow, I bought a dozen from Dr. Fire Knock because he sold me that this is the best arrow built with the finest fletching, the best knock, and the best tip. Like there's nothing straighter, more truer, better flying than this setup right here. And I wanted to prove him that there's no way, you know, there's no way that thing's going to be the best. And really, these 12 arrows shoot so good. They go right where they should. But this is what I do with my setup. I don't mess with my bow a lot. What I do is I take this arrow after I purchase this arrow from someone that knows way more than me, that built this arrow for roughly what I want to shoot, you know, 70 pounds, this cam, this draw length. And so I'll take this arrow and my bow and send it to someone that knows more than me and have them tune that bow to this arrow, build a string, you know, if it needs it, if I need a new string on my bow, build a string with the serving size for this knock to where I know the knock fix is going to be correct. And so that way I know it's me or I know it's the equipment. I'm getting rid of all kinds of variables. I know it sounds extreme, but you might as well rule some things out before you go out in the field and try to figure something out. Rule it out way ahead of time.
Yeah, and I mean, just to reverse engineer that, if somebody's at home saying, I'm not paying, you know, $400 for a set of arrows, I don't know what you paid for them, but I know
that's
good,
what it was.
I know what I know what a good set of arrows costs. But they could do that on their own, but it would just take weighing out, spine testing,
exactly,
you know, doing all of that stuff and making sure that they had, mm-hmm, you know, three arrows. They might not need a dozen if they're just going to shoot, you know, mm-hmm, but you know, you could do all that stuff on your own, but you're just saying, you know, I'm paying for someone else to do it.
I don't think the average person can do that on their own. I mean,
this is the highest quality carbon that, I mean, maybe there's better, but this dude sold it as this is the highest quality carbon there is, and this is the best fletch, this is the best knock, and this is the best component to go in the front. I mean,
but I just think about, like, when he's talking about that, I think about, like, you and, like, I'm not buying cabinets, I'm building them, because I'm not paying that much for cabinets. I can build them for myself.
Like, but I'm thinking it's a time issue. So
yeah,
I have six kids now. I just had my sixth kid not too long ago, right before Lancaster. Actually, my wife, I'm so lucky that she let me go to Lancaster. And so I take the time, I find time by letting someone else do it.
Right.
Let someone else build these arrows for me. Let someone else build my bow for me with this arrow that I want to shoot out of this bow. And then that way, all I have to do is sight it in and shoot it. I don't have to mess with too much. Andrew had to shim his cams the other day on his new bow. I try not to do that even. I let someone else do that for me because I want to just spend the time to be tailgate ready, and that's it. I don't want to spend too much time tinkering with something, because then, for me anyways, I'll learn too much, I'll know too much, and then I'll try to fix something that shouldn't be fixed, which is probably something that I'm doing anyways. So I got one thing to focus on, is just to shoot that bow as good as I can.
Right.
So that's what I'm getting at is with.
There's a lot of rabbit holes you can go down.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm staying out of those rabbit holes by spending a little bit of extra money up front.
And it's like, well,
and so, time is way more valuable than money.
Right.
We're all young enough sitting here to where it's easy to make money. Money is easy. Time is not easy.
No, time you never get back.
But. No, money's easy come, easy go.
So how many arrows you think are getting in to the truck this year?
For me?
No, for
people?
For total.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. So let's go back down the whole year in, year out of tax. So like year number one with that Toyota, I don't know. I don't know what the number was. I'm guessing probably 25, mm-hmm, if that, 15.
It was somewhere in there.
It was low. And then for the Ford F-150 that I won with someone else's bow and only shooting two arrows at it, and hitting one of them and calling it good enough, that was 37 or 38 people. And then the next year, 40 or so. And then the next year after that, I think we're up to like 70. And then are we to last year already? I think so. I think we're to last year already.
Yeah, because I think the second year you won it, there was like 70, mid-70s.
78. There were 78. And then last year, which was the camo-wrapped
bear,
four cylinder turbo, right?
Yeah. Posted 19 miles to the gallon.
Better than 12, the one I'm running. But anyways.
That might be your driving, though.
Yeah. That, I believe it hit 170, maybe. It cracked 100. Yeah. It cracked 100. So I'm thinking this year, with some of my tips and tricks that hopefully everyone's wrote down and took note of, that we're going to be breaking 200, 250.
And Andrew's going to get in this
year. Andrew's going to get in.
Let's hope so. We've had a lot of line breakers and a lot of heartbreakers. And
so if you have time and it's possible, try to shoot two different tack events. Tennessee this year is in Georgia. Andrew and I are going to PA. And then we're going to run back here and do Michigan. We're not going to go down to Georgia. We're just PA because we want to see what PA is like, because PA is 4 days of tack. And so that's, you know, that's a big deal for East Coast stuff. And so what I'm getting at is, if you want to win the truck and you have time, shoot two different locations to try to see which one's the most favorable for you. And I recommend everyone to come to Michigan, because it's happened twice for me in Michigan. Michigan, there's something about the air here. Well, the arrows hit the middle.
It's even one of those things, we've talked about it in the past, and a majority of the trucks have been won on the east coast of the state.
Not necessarily we're better shooters over here. It's just
something with the air, I guess.
Yep.
The humid air.
Where did AJ hit his? Was it in Michigan?
Which was AJ?
The coffee Viking, the long haired guy.
Oh,
I think
he's from Ohio.
I think this was a PA.
I think so. Yeah, you're right. I forgot his.
I mean, he was a one arrow guy.
He was one arrow guy. Yep.
I think even the guy last year was a one arrow guy too.
Huh. So that just lets you know, folks, that it can be done. I mean, and if it can be done once, it can be done twice. And,
yeah.
You know, third time, I think you're out. I think
we'll see. I think I won it last year and they just didn't give it to me.
Yeah. You know, after all the uproar, they just couldn't, you know.
All right. Well, we'll look for these fellas in PA and up in Michigan. And Andrew, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. And so look for Andrew on Instagram. I'll tag him here. I'm going to take a picture and tag him with the Bow Hunter podcast crew here. And we'll be holding these arrows. And so just make sure you zoom in on these arrows. Not necessarily you have to shoot these brands of arrows, but if you want a chance to win the truck, put some effort into it. Spend some money. Buy a premium target arrow. Because these tolerance, they don't even put .001 on these arrows. These things are just, you spending the money, you're going to get a good arrow.
And I also think putting in the practice at 20 yards with that shot replication, practicing your form, practicing your follow through, that's going to make you better than, you know, sitting down and shooting 10 dozen arrows at 100 yards.
There's a good point right there.
Up close, working on that shot form, because that can be translated out from 20 yards to 60 yards to 80 yards to 150 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting that process down to where every shot feels the same, every shot is the same, and that's going to increase your accuracy downrange at longer.
My favorite distance is 7, like you've said a few times tonight. 6 or 7, wherever your 20-yard pin hits middle at that close range is my favorite place to practice.
And that's just, for me, I can see what I'm shooting at, mm-hmm. and I can be fully engaged in the whole thing. And yeah. I think, I don't know if that's good or bad, but
it's good.
It works. Mm-hmm. It's helping me. So yeah,
keep it up. You're doing good.
7 yards here goes through the wall.
Yeah. I'm going to be in the garage.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't do it here then.
So, well, all right, fellas. I really appreciate you giving us the time. And John, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Hope to hear more from you.
Be gone for another 2 months.
We'll see at TAC, you're saying?
Yeah.
That's about 2 months away.
All right.
Look for that picture, everyone, on my Instagram or the Bow Hunter Podcast Instagram.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Later.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.